which is also turning out to be a very interesting primary race.
National news. Here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVOX.
News Radio. I'm Lee Silasera.
We need to unite behind Ted Cruz.
Utah Republican Senator Mike Lee, moments ago, the first sitting senator to endorse Cruz in his bid for the White House.
He promised that he would fight against Obamacare. He promised he would resist efforts to undermine our Second Amendment rights as Americans. He promised that he would oppose any efforts to undermine religious liberty. Ted has kept those promises.
Asked by a reporter about Marco Rubio, Lee said if Rubio were to ask him, he would tell him to get behind Cruz. Senator Lee making the comments in South Florida, not far from Rubio's home. President Obama weighing in on the Republican White House race.
I've often said I want a serious, effective Republican Party.
The president taking the question during a news conference with the Canadian Prime Minister. Fox News, we report, you decide.
I had a motorcycle accident. It was freakishly horrific. And my left leg took the brunt of the impact as I slid into the guardrail. I almost bled out. Luckily, someone was there to help me. I was airlifted to Westchester Medical Center. I was told that my left leg had been amputated just below the knee. It was a pretty traumatic experience. The extent of the damage to my body could have only been handled by the best of the best. Had I gone to any other hospital, the likelihood of me surviving my accident would have dramatically decreased. And Westchester Medical was able to save my life. So I owe them everything. You know, thanks to them, I got to see my son again.
The advanced care Westchester Medical Center provides isn't just about saving lives. It's about lives worth living. Hear more patient stories at westchestermedicalcenter.com.
People need to know this about Monroe College. Elite students and leaders can come out of Monroe. I'm a Monroe student, and even I didn't know what I could accomplish. Then Monroe arranged an internship for me at an international bank, and I realized I can do this. With a Monroe education, I can succeed at this level. I just never knew. And I'm second generation Monroe. My father went from cab dispatcher to Monroe College to an investment advisor with an MBA. But the idea of a mom with two daughters from the Bronx as a banker? Well, it took Monroe to open that door and open my eyes. I can build a career, get the capital I need, and maybe start my own business.
Yes, you can get your college degree. A good first step is our open house Tuesday, April 16th, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Call to reserve a place. 1-800-55-MONROE. Education for the real world.
Steve Pelletieri's Eye on Weather is brought to you on WVOX by Energy and the Indian Point Energy Center, right for New York.
Forecast of Westchester County and the vicinity for tonight. Cloudy, rain likely through the evening hours, and patchy fog overnight, lows into the lower 50s. Mostly sunny on Friday. Temperatures will range near 60. Clear skies at night, 35 to 40. Still above normal temperatures as we head into the weekend. Mostly sunny, highs around 60 on Saturday. Partly to mostly cloudy for Sunday, into the upper 50s. Periods of rain possible by Monday. I'm Steve Pelletieri, Jr., reporting for 1460 WVOX.
75 cloudy in New
York. Every day, New Yorkers depend upon the clean and reliable electricity provided by Indian Point. On an average day, Indian Point provides about a quarter of the electricity for New York City and Westchester at lower cost than other power plants, and helps our efforts to improve air quality. You have a right to know the facts about Indian Point, because when talk turns to extending the licenses of these plants, we all need to remember how important Indian Point is to New York. For instance, did you know that without Indian Point's lower cost power, our electric rates would be much higher, and that an equivalent gas-fired power plant would pour millions of tons of pollutants a year into the air we breathe, and that the independent experts in charge of New York's electric grid have said that the city could face rolling blackouts without Indian Point. I'm Teresa Motko, and I'm an engineer here at Indian Point, and my family and I live in the area. All of us have a right to know why Indian Point is right for New York. Visit rightfornewyork.com for answers.
Good Morning Westchester returns tomorrow morning at 6, exclusively on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com.
Now on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, back to the Matthew Mary Show. You can join Matthew in the conversation now at 914-636-0110. Once again, distinguished criminal defense attorney Matthew J. Mary.
Welcome back to the Matthew Mary Show. Our guest today is presidential historian Professor Ronald Fineman. His blog is The Progressive Professor, and his book is Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency. Professor Fineman, before we get on to the Democrats, let's assume Donald Trump goes into the convention short of having the necessary number of delegates. Let's say he goes in with 1150. How are the party elders going to do it to him?
Well, I think hell's going to break loose, as I think clearly. It's a hard scenario to imagine in the modern times that they're going to, on TV and cable and everybody away with all the social media. It's going to be very hard to deny him the nomination.
Well, let's move over to the Democrats. I know you're really on top of the Democratic primary. At this particular point, it seems, according to the New York Daily News, Hillary Clinton has 760 delegates and Bernie Sanders has 546. I mean, Bernie Sanders just can't keep pulling off Michigan's. And if he's going to win this, he has to, really beat her almost all the time. But let's start out with this. What do you think happened in Michigan?
Well, the polling was not good, and it shows you can't always rely on polls. But I think there may have been a certain amount of too much confidence on the part of the Clinton camp that they had it in the bag. I think they may not have worked as hard as they should have. But also, it's clear that younger people in general are really going to Bernie, which is funny because he's the oldest presidential candidate ever, would be the oldest president ever if he took the oath. And somehow the older voters are going for Hillary, and I just think that's quite funny.
Why do you think the young people are so attracted to Bernie? I think it's because they're just sick and tired of Hillary Clinton's face, sick and tired of hearing her voice, and Bernie is someone new and refreshing because he tells the truth.
Well, he's very genuine and authentic, and of course, his idea of promoting free tuition college, public university, is appealing, and also trying to deal with the student debt problem, which is a major one. I think that does appeal, and he comes across as passionate in a way that Hillary even yesterday said, I'm not a natural politician like my husband or Barack Obama. And it's true, she really isn't. She's a little bit shy, a little bit reserved, a little bit stiff. And I think, she's going to have problems. And it's amazing to think that this person who is so talented and has been the first lady and senator and secretary of state first gets defeated by a first-term African-American senator and now can be defeated by an old guy who's been around a long time in Congress and has been a socialist until recently. It is unbelievable, really, if it actually were to happen.
Well, going into a positive for Hillary Clinton, why do you think blacks are so loyal? The African-American community seems to be solidly behind Hillary Clinton.
Well, they don't really know Bernie too well, and Bernie comes from a state, Vermont, that has almost no minorities in it. And I think also Bill Clinton, he was often called the first African-American president, even though he's not. So there is a loyalty going back to Bill Clinton, I guess.
Now, Bernie Sanders has ran an amazing campaign. At this point in time, I think Hillary certainly is well advised to be very, very concerned. What kind of strategy changes must she employ to bump Bernie off?
I don't know if there's any really good strategy, because he's getting money from, you know, from ordinary people. He's had 5 million contributors, and she's had more trouble raising money even from her super PACs. And I really don't know what I would advise her. I guess just keep on plugging away. She has the advantage. She has a majority of the super delegates, apparently, those who are actually party members, which personally I don't think should exist. We should not have super delegates, but that fact will give her an edge, but also might taint her nomination a little bit if she wins it only because of the superdelegates.
You know, this email problem for Hillary Clinton is something that's been around now for months and months and months and months. And there's been talk from the very beginning, which is intensifying right now, about the possibility of Hillary Clinton being indicted for this. Now, let me tell you, as a lawyer, I don't think this is the biggest, quote, crime, end quote, in the world. But as a presidential candidate, I think such an event would be fatal to her. As a political observer, do you think she's going to be indicted? And what's taking the Justice Department so long to make this decision?
I do not know why they're taking so long, but my gut feeling, and I'm not an attorney, is that she will not be indicted. And basically, the use of emails was done by Condoleezza Rice and also by, of course, Kerry's used it before, and also Colin Powell. So, and Colin Powell said it's not an issue. It's not a big deal. So I think a lot of it's still been politicized. But the fact that it's still not settled is disturbing.
You know, a lot of people think that Obama's holding the Justice Department back on the indictment to protect Hillary. Then other people feel that Obama is really an enemy of Hillary and is going to allow this to happen at the most inopportune moment to open the door miraculously for his buddy Joe Biden. Now, that's a that's a really long shot. But what do you think about that? I know you've studied the career of Joe Biden and know a lot about him.
Yes, well, first of all, I do not believe he's involved in a conspiracy. I don't believe, meaning the president, I don't think he's involved in a conspiracy either direction. As far as Joe Biden, I've been unofficially the leader of the Joe Biden fan club. And in fact, I wrote on my blog a year ago about him possibly running for vice president for a third term if he wasn't running for president, and he could. And John Hockenberry of The Takeaway on NPR found it and interviewed me on January 21st for 7 minutes about it, about the idea of Joe Biden running for vice president for a third term, and he could. But of course, if God forbid, if anything happened where Hillary had to drop out, I think Joe Biden would step in. I think he'd love to be president for, you know, for the future, and I think he would be a dynamic president, and I think he would have a great edge for the election. That's my opinion.
I certainly think that a lot more people like Joe Biden than they do Hillary Clinton. I mean, she's created a lot of enemies through her political life, and there are a lot of anti-Clinton people out there. So Joe Biden would probably be a safe choice if the Hillary Clinton campaign implodes. Probably Biden would be a better candidate in a general election than Bernie Sanders would.
Yes, I think he would. And the thing is, he's very sincere, genuine, and authentic. Everybody, I've never known anybody, whatever their political views, who doesn't like Joe Biden personally, including people across the aisle. You know, Mitch McConnell likes him, Lindsey Graham likes him, John McCain likes him. And, you know, that's not typical these days. So even if they don't agree, they can get along. And he has gotten things done for President Obama, has been able to help things out in Congress. And in that way, he's like LBJ. He's not LBJ's personality, but he can get things done. He definitely can. And if he was elected, I think he would be really a real legislative person, like an LBJ. Maybe not. I'm not saying as much as LBJ, but I think he would strive to do a lot, and he would be a very active leader as far as trying to get things accomplished.
All right. Now, Ron, you've spent your entire adult life studying the American presidency, and your book is called Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency, from Andrew Jackson to Barack Obama. Now, we've been through the book in a previous show, but obviously we can't start from beginning to end. Let me just ask you, what made you write this particular book?
Well, the thing is, I've done lectures on this in South Florida for years. I've been interested in it since way back when I was in college, at the time of the Kennedy assassination. And also, I did my term paper as a freshman at Queens College in New York City on the Lincoln assassination. And Roman Littlefield found me, I guess I could say, on my Florida Atlantic University website, saw that I was doing local lectures. It was advertised on the Internet. And they wrote to me in July 2013, asking if I would like to write a book on this subject. And since I'm semi-retired now, still teach but not full-time, I figured, why not? And it's a subject I really am passionate about. So I decided, okay, and it took me, including every aspect of it, 2 years, and it came out in August of 2015.
Well, when we get back, Professor, we're going to talk about your book, and we don't have all that much time, but we've got a good 10 minutes or so. So think about your favorite stories.
With world and national news, here is the latest update from Fox News Radio on 1460 WVOX.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen McHugh. German authorities have reportedly gotten hold of over 20,000 ISIS files that contain personal info on some of its members, according to our sister network, Sky News. Our military would like to see them.
This would allow the law enforcement apparatus across the world to become much more heavily engaged and begin to help do what we can to stem this flow of foreign fighters.
Colonel Steve Warren, spokesman for the U.S.-led coalition fighting ISIS. At the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in Southern California, thousands continue to line up to pay final respects to the late Nancy Reagan.
Last night when they were about to close the library, there were still some 1,000 people in line. And everyone that we talked to said that it was well worth the wait.
Fox's Trace Gallagher in Simi Valley, the former First Lady's funeral is tomorrow. Nestle announces a voluntary recall of some of its DiGiorno, Lean Cuisine, and Stouffer's products because they may contain small traces of glass. No injuries have been reported. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Is Dale Pazinski. I'm 19 years old, and this is how I live United. I've always been kind of a computer geek, and I found a way to use those skills to help the homeless in my community. For people facing hard times, computer skills and a basic resume are so important. It may seem like a small thing, but it makes a huge difference in people's lives. So with United Way, I created a program where I work with the homeless. Together, we go through their whole job history, write a resume, and then save it on their very own USB drive. We provide workbooks and training certificates. I even budgeted for cupcakes so we can celebrate as a class when one of our people gets a job. That's huge. When somebody says, hey man, that job that you helped me apply for, I got it. That's what living United feels like to me. My name is Dale Pazinski. I help people achieve financial independence. So I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Dudley's Parkview Restaurant. They had their beginnings as a part of their boat facilities way back in the 1920s. Three generations later, handed down from father to daughter to grandsons, Electra Davis and her personable family have made Dudley's into a full-fledged and much sought-after restaurant, open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner from 9 a.m. to at least 2 a.m., 7 days a week. Tom Poligrand's family is proud to continue the tradition of a restaurant that is part of a marina and a marina that is very much a part of a restaurant, located on the water, right on the water, overlooking Echo Bay Harbor. Dudley's has a friendly and casual popular bar with live music every Saturday night. Plus, they specialize in catering to private parties. As for food, you'd be remiss if you didn't try their grilled chicken or steak or fresh seafood or their famed barge burgers. So, whether you go to Dudley's and have a cocktail at the bar, dine in their dining room, or on their deck enjoying the view of the water, you'll feel as if you're on holiday, and you'll find yourself in the most relaxed of atmospheres because Dudley's is a place to enjoy with family, with friends, or just the two of you for a delightful time together. Dudley's Parkview Restaurant is located at 94 Hudson Park Road, right here in New Rochelle. Ever since the 1920s, Dudley's has been known as that family-owned restaurant where you are always welcomed. And don't forget, on Thursday, March 17th, Dudley's plays host to WVOX and all your Westchester neighbors for the legendary St. Patrick's live celebration beginning at noon.
America's great community radio station. This is New York State's most influential radio station, local and vocal, WVOX, where many different voices are heard in the land every day and every night. And now all over the world at WVOX.com.
WVOX.
Now on 1460 WVOX and WVOX.com, back to the Matthew Mary Show. You can join Matthew in the conversation now at 914-636-0110. Once again, distinguished criminal defense attorney Matthew J. Mary.
Welcome back to the Matthew Mary Show. Our guest today is presidential historian Professor Ronald L. Fineman, and his book is Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency. Professor, you know, your book covers just about everything on this subject. Of course, it covers Lincoln, Garfield, McKinley, JFK, the attempts on President Reagan and President Ford. The public is pretty much well aware of those particular events, but I was amazed to see the things that even I, as a person who is a major in political science and history and a lawyer, I didn't know about the attempts on Teddy Roosevelt, FDR, and all the other stuff in your book that's not really out there. What are some of your favorite stories that you'd like to relate in these last few minutes we have?
Sure. Well, with Teddy Roosevelt, we, of course, I think a lot of people know about 1912 when he's running on a third party line, the Progressive Party, and he has, of course, he's shot and wounded, but gives an 80-minute speech. I think most people know that. But in 1903, when the Secret Service had only started to protect the president 2 years after McKinley's assassination, he was home in Oyster Bay at Sagamore Hill on Long Island, and a young man named Henry Weilbrenner comes up one evening to the house and wants to see the president, and he is told, no, you don't have an appointment, because he didn't have one. He comes back a total of three times he's there, and they start to question him. I mean, why is this guy coming back? And they check and discover firearms on him. So it seems as if he was thinking if he could have spoken to the president to try to assault him. And therefore, although it's not well known, I found it in Long Island newspapers online from that time. I've never seen it in any Teddy Roosevelt book, at least that I've seen, about his life. And it was like, wow, this could have been the assassination, in theory, of TR. And that would have meant Secretary of State John Hay, who was actually quite famous and had been a secretary to Abraham Lincoln living in the White House during the Civil War, would have become president in 1903. So that's a very interesting and unknown story to most people, as one example.
And another example is Franklin Delano Roosevelt, prior to being inaugurated in 1933, an individual named Giuseppe Zangara was stalking him and actually killed Chicago Mayor Anton Cermak.
That's correct. And the thing is, if he had been killed, we would have had Vice President-elect John Nance Garner of Texas as president, and we probably would not have had the New Deal, because Garner was from the South and was not for much of what FDR did and opposed him actually privately a lot of the time. And in 1940, when FDR decided to run for a third term, Garner challenged him for the nomination because he felt FDR should not be running again. And he was also an isolationist at that time. Well, FDR certainly was not, so history really was changed by the fact of what happened, that FDR was saved.
Another interesting story is the story of Arthur Bremer, who was the person who shot George Wallace. Yes. And he was stalking Richard Nixon before he paralyzed George Wallace on the campaign trail.
Had he been able to kill Nixon, Spiro Agnew, before we knew about his illegal activities, which forced him out of office in 1973, in 72, he could have become president of the United States.
So in other words, when George C. Wallace, who was pretty much regarded by the media and the general population as a bigot, when he was mowed down and shot down and wound up in a wheelchair, almost died, most Americans, including me, thought that this was strictly an anti-George Wallace person who wanted to kill George Wallace because of those reasons. But actually, he had been after Richard Nixon.
Yes, Arthur Bremmer was only 21, the youngest possible assassin that we know of. And he just wanted notoriety and fame. He had read books about Sirhan Sirhan, who had killed Robert Kennedy, about Lee Harvey Oswald. He was just looking for fame. He obviously was mentally ill. And that's usually what is the case with just about all of the assassins, except maybe John Wilkes Booth, Lincoln's assassin. That was more political.
And another little-known fact in your book is that John Hinckley actually stalked President Jimmy Carter before shooting Ronald Reagan.
Yes, about October 1980, and if he had killed Carter, Vice President Walter Mondale, one of my 15 might-have-been presidents in Chapter 17, would have become president about a few weeks before the election. It might have changed the election results where Reagan might not have won, as he did over Carter. Who knows? You know, last-minute changes, if things happen suddenly, like God forbid a terrorist attack now, or some kind of terrible event of some other kind, it can change people's votes. So it could have been that President Mondale, short-term there, might have defeated Reagan, and Reagan never would have been in the White House at all.
I think your most interesting chapter to me, Chapter 17, might have been presidents. Tell us a little bit about Chapter 17. There's some names in there. People don't often think of Lafayette Foster, Hannibal Hamlin, Garrett Hobart. Garrett Hobart.
Senate when Lincoln is killed, and if Andrew Johnson had been killed, he would have been, under the succession laws, President of the United States, and it dredged him up from obscurity. And Hannibal Hamlin was the first-term vice president under Lincoln, but dropped for Johnson. If he had not switched Lincoln to Andrew Johnson, Hannibal Hamlin would have been president. And then there's Garrett Hobart, who was McKinley's vice president, very close to him, very significant, actually considered an active vice president, but he died of heart disease in 1899. There was no replacement, of course, under the Constitution at the time, no 25th Amendment. But therefore, in 1900, when McKinley ran for a second term, he chose T.R., and therefore T.R. ends up in the White House 6 months into the second McKinley term, and it would have been President Hobart.
Isn't it amazing that I mean, in recent times, perhaps not, but it's amazing when you look through the history of the presidency, how many presidents run for re-election and don't pick their sitting vice president, that they pick someone else.
It's happened a few times. Lincoln did that. Jefferson did that because Aaron Burr tried to take the first term away from him in the Electoral College, you know, in the House of Representatives in 1800. He dropped Aaron Burr and picked George Clinton. And also, FDR had three vice presidents. He had John Nance Garner in his first and second term, Henry A. Wallace in his third term, and then Harry Truman in the brief short term. And, of course, he could have kept Wallace, and Wallace would have been president. He's not one of my 15 might-have-beens, but in theory, if FDR had died earlier or kept Wallace, Truman never would have been in. It would have been Henry A. Wallace.
You know, as I sit here in the WVOX studio, one of the favorite people around here, and I know Bill O'Shaughnessy loved him, and the studio that I'm sitting in is called the Nelson A. Rockefeller Studio, the longtime, four-time governor of New York, and the vice president of the United States under very strange circumstances. He almost became president.
Yes, when Gerald Ford was indeed a threat from from the net squeaky foam on September 5th, 1975 in Sacramento, and then and then Sarah Jane Moore on September 22nd, 1975, only 17 days apart. Although Frome didn't actually shoot at him, Moore did, and her bullet was deflected by a Marine. But indeed, Nelson Rockefeller twice in 17 days, I'm sure, must have had a gasp and said, oh my gosh, is this it? Because after all, he had tried for president in 60, 64, and 68, and here he had two shots, no pun intended, at being it. And actually, that really upset the conservatives of the Republican Party, the Reagan wing, and they pushed Ford when he won the nomination over Reagan at the 76th convention in Kansas City to indeed dump Rockefeller and pick Bob Dole, because they said, we will not back you if you keep Rockefeller as vice president.
And it seems the beat goes on. We were talking yesterday about an Egyptian national student who made a threat against Trump, and also the Glenn Beck story. Tell us about those two, if we have time to get them in.
The Egyptian national student, on Facebook wrote a threat against Trump, and he's going to be deported. And Glenn Beck on his show, I don't know why he does it. He's a little strange. He was talking about the idea of taking a knife and stabbing Trump very deeply. And then we had this person named Odom who shot a pastor who was back in Cruz in Idaho, and then went to the got in a plane, got there just yesterday or the day before, and came to the White House and threw something over the fence, and was then arrested by the Secret Service. He was claiming that there are Martians, Martian aliens are taking over the country, and that Obama has been put in by Martians.
Tell us a little bit about your website and your blog, if we have time.
Okay, www.theprogressiveprofessor.com is my blog, and also I'm on Facebook, and on Facebook, besides my name, I'm also on the Assassinations, Threats, and the American Presidency site of Facebook, where I post information about past assassinations and all the stories about assassinations and threats now.
All right, Ronald Fineman, thanks very much for being our guest a third time on the 93rd Matthew Mary Show.
Thank you so much, and I hope there's a fourth time.
Okay, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Listening to The Matthew Mary Show, featuring distinguished criminal defense attorney Matthew J. Mary. Join Matthew again next week at 3, only on 1460.